Coming to you from the outskirts of the greatest professional wrestling territory in history, Memphis, Tennessee, it's Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall. This is Foxy. We have a very special show for all you wrestling fans listening today. The mayor's been super excited for this show, and he is the founder, president, CEO of this podcast. He is the booker of the stars. He is the man with the plan. Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor McCall.
Thank you so much, Foxy. We have a very, very special guest with us today. He's a wrestling legend and icon known all over the globe. He is a King of the Ring winner. He's a two-time WWF Intercontinental Champion, a two-time WWF Tag Team Champion. Ladies and gentlemen, WWE Hall of Famer Tito Santana.
Arriba! Thank you for having me here.
Oh, the honor is all ours. I've been excited about this one all day long. And once again, you know, thank you for coming on and doing this with us. We'll go ahead and get it kicked off. Where are you originally from?
I was born in Mission, Texas.
Okay. I think a lot of people think that you were born in Mexico, but I'm glad we got to clear that up off the beginning.
Well, that's Vince Sr. wanted me to be billed from Mexico, and he just told me to pick a town. And, you know, I actually picked Toluca, and Howard Finkel couldn't pronounce it, so he kept saying Tecula, so that's where Tecula came from.
Ah, very interesting. So how did you actually get into professional wrestling?
Well, I don't know if you know, but you know, there's a few of us that played football at West Texas State.
Yes, sir. A couple of them have been my former guests on here, including like Ted DiBiase, Manny Fernandez.
Well, as a matter of fact, Ted DiBiase and Tully Blanchard and myself were on the same team. And Tully Blanchard started talking to me about my junior year about becoming a professional wrestler. You know, I wasn't interested in wrestling because I wasn't a wrestling fan and I didn't know, you know, much about wrestling. But he planted the seed my junior year in high school, in college.
So you wasn't a professional wrestling fan growing up?
Well, no, because, you know, I'm from Mission, Texas, and wrestling, I believe, used to come on either at 11 or 12, you know, and, you know, I was playing three different sports, so I wasn't staying up, you know, that late to watch wrestling, especially when I didn't know anything about it.
You wasn't hooked yet. I got you. So Tully planted that seed at West Texas State University, huh?
Yes, he did.
Well, I'm glad he did, so the world, you know, knows who Tito Santana is. Thank you, Tully. We appreciate that, sir.
You know, I'm grateful.
Oh, we all are. You're a true wrestling legend, and we appreciate all your years of, you know, hard work entertaining us away from your family, and, you know, we can't thank you enough. You've, you know, definitely a childhood hero of mine.
Thank you so much.
I can remember, you know, Jesse Ventura and, you know, Gorilla Monsoon, you know, calling the matches. I remember just like it was yesterday.
Yes.
How was it?
Jesse the Body.
Yes, Jesse the Body. Did you like it when he called you Chico or no?
Jesse and I have great memories in the ring. He was very fond of me. He loved, you know, he was asked if he was to choose a guy to wrestle against, he would always say Tito Santana. We used to have some great matches. You know, he used to get all kinds of heat. I mean, he was a master of the ring. So whenever he called me, you know, you could get away with it back then. He was actually, you know, helping me get over.
I agree with that. He did have a way of, you know, putting you over and getting the audience, you know, excited about you. I agree with that.
Yep.
What was it like being trained by Hiro Matsuda? He ever stretch you out really good?
No. I think Terry Funk also had a big say on me, you know, getting started in professional wrestling. And I guess the fact that I was an athlete, and the first time that I stepped into the ring with him, you know, I had a great attitude. And he knew that he could see that I was an athlete. But, I worked hard, you know, and it didn't take long before he started trying to teach me how to wrestle. He didn't try to stretch me once. You know, I had a lot of respect for him, and I think he appreciated that.
Wow, yeah, we've heard the stories. You know how to be, you know, to train under Hiro Matsuda. Yeah, but that, I guess that meant that he did have a lot of respect for you. Of course, your, you know, collegiate, your athletic background, that he felt like he didn't need to maybe, you know, go that route with you.
Yeah, I think there was a lot that had a lot to do with it. I'm sure Terry Funk and Tully Blanchard had already talked about me, you know, coming in, and you know, all I had to do was, you know, just start learning how to. I mean, I had to learn how to crawl before I walked, and just hitting the ropes, my whole body on one side was completely purple, and you know, learning the bumps. I was not easy to train. You know, everything was really difficult for me. You know, learning how to take bumps. You know, I had fear of taking bumps, and I had fear of learning how to throw a drop kick and coming down on my hands and supporting my weight. And you know, it was all a very slow process. But once I got going, you know, I got going pretty quick.
Yeah, you did. Is there anybody else, you know, that you can remember that had a big hand in your training just getting started?
Well, I do remember Barry Orton was also working out with his father, with not, you know, Bob Orton Sr. It was his brother, you know. I'm talking about Bob Orton Sr., which is, you know, long gone. He was working out with him, so he would work out with me also. And even Cowboy Bob Orton would stop once in a while and work out with both of us. So, you know, both Cowboy Bob Orton and his father, and working out with Barry. Hiro Matsuda didn't care too much for Barry, because I believe that guys that came from the family of wrestlers, they picked it up a lot quicker than somebody like myself. So Barry was already, you know, he knew he wanted to be a heel, and he was already prancing around the ring and, you know, talking to the fans. You know, there was no fans there, but, you know, he was already practicing his interviews, you know, and Hiro Matsuda kind of resented that. You know, he says, this guy doesn't even know how to crawl. And, you know, he's a smart ass, and, you know, he says, just learn the 7 takedowns. He taught me, he says, if you learn the 7 takedowns and know how to do them well, you can have a match with anybody. I'm talking about a headlock, take them over, arm drag, take them over, fireman carry, go behind, single leg dive. You know, I know there were 7. I can't even remember all of them right now, but, you know, he really preached, you know, for me to learn those 7 takedowns, and, you know, then everything else would come, and learn how to hit the ropes. Everything else would come to piece together.
Absolutely. You're one of these wrestling legends I could spend, you know, straight 2 weeks, you know, talking to, and we still wouldn't cover everything. So we're just going to jump around. I'm going to hit some highlights and so forth. What did it mean to you to win the WWF Tag Team Championship with Ivan Putski at Madison Square Garden?
Well, you know, coming from Mission, Texas, which was the population was 14,000 people, and then wrestling, you know, for the first time in Madison Square Garden, to see all those people, you know, I was just beginning. That was I think I had been in the business like 3 years, and to be wrestling in Madison Square Garden that quick, you know, I was just happy to be there. And then when they told me that I was going to be getting the belts, like, I wasn't known to anybody. I was catapulted. You know, I was a world tag team champion all over the world. You know, it just brought me from one level to another, you know. And I've always said this. I'm very grateful for Ivan Putski to take me under his wing and, you know, teach me the ropes of being one of the top guys.
Absolutely. It seems like since day one, you've really been, you know, surrounded by some really good wrestlers that really took good care of you along the way.
Yes, I came in, like I said, and I had a lot of respect for the business. I was very humble. I would kiss everybody's butt, asking them to watch my match and, tell me what I was doing wrong and what I could. When you're a professional athlete and when somebody gives you constructive criticism, it kind of hurts. But when somebody takes the time to watch you and tell you what you're doing wrong, they're trying to help you. Tony Atlas, was a good friend of mine, and I met him early on in my career. And Tony wanted me to wrestle like him, but Tony Atlas was a power lifter, And
he's a big dude.
I wasn't going to wrestle like him, so he would try to give me advice, and I would just listen, and I would never say anything to him. But I said, I'm not going to work like you. I'm gonna learn how to work, more like Ricky Steamboat or, some of the, the good wrestlers, the good baby faces.
Speaking of that, you were a baby face. If I'm not mistaken, you were a baby face throughout your whole career in wrestling. Is that correct?
Yes. It's one of the things that people hit me up with.
Was that by your choice, or is that just how it worked out, or did you stay firm and be like, no, I'm going to remain, this is who I am, and I'm more comfortable being a baby face?
No, it's just the way it worked out. I don't know if you remember when Strikeforce was formed, and then me and Rick Martel split up. When I found out that we were going to be split up, I asked Vince if I could be the heel. But, unknown to me, they never shared this with me, but they already had a plan for Rick to come in as the model, and so the one time that I tried, it didn't work.
I definitely remember, as everybody remembers your time with Strikeforce. We'll get to that momentarily. What are your memories of wrestling Nick Bockwinkel in the AWA?
Well, Nick Bockwinkel to me was as good a champion as there is. I put him up there with Harley Race, with Terry Funk, with anybody else, and Vern Gagne was a smart promoter, and he started pushing me in Denver and Houston, and I had a little bit of a feud with Nick Bockwinkel. I had, I think, three or four return matches where I ended up going an hour. We used to call them Broadway, and when I found out I was going to go 60 minutes with Nick Bockwinkel, I don't know. I was lucky that I was in good shape and I was able to. But, he carried me. But Nick Bockwinkel, they warned me about this. He would, get you in the headlock and he'd put all his weight on your chest and get you tired. He was a little sneaky also.
Absolutely. Man, February 11th, 1984, you would win the WWF Intercontinental title from Don Morocco. Talk to us about that. What did that mean to you at that point in time?
Well, that really meant so much to me. When I came in to New York, which was my second time around, in 1983, Don Morocco was feuding with the Superfly Jimmy Snuka. And, they were selling out pretty much everywhere. Morocco was the IC champion, and I guess when they told me that I was going to get the belt, because I don't know, I was never privy to being part of the office. They never confided in me. I was never an office guy, and I didn't want to be an office guy. I didn't want to be considered a stooge, and get a black mark on you. But when they told me that I was going to get the title, the IC belt at that time meant a lot.
I can only imagine. So it seemed like a lot of times you would just get to the building or wherever, and they would just tell you what was going to go on that night, and you'd go from there.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, because, people got to remember that's way before the days of cell phones and the internet and anything like that. So a lot of your stuff was probably just word of mouth.
Yeah, back then, a lot of the fans, a lot of the fans really thought wrestling was in the up and up, and the wrestlers, we used to protect the business. We the heels didn't travel with the heels, with the baby faces. And, you know, we were very, very protective of the business, you know, and a lot of fans believed it.
Absolutely. That's back when, you know, kayfabe was alive and well, before the days of the dirt sheets and the internet.
That's right.
You know, you would actually go on, you would appear at the first 9 WrestleManias, which is just, if the fans and audience can think about it, that's just amazing and incredible. You were in the very first WrestleMania match, the opening match. To me, I think this is just such an honor for what Vince, you know, everyone thought of you. Because, you know, everybody, if you look back, all the eggs were in one basket. If WrestleMania 1 didn't go over well, didn't produce like it was supposed to, you know, we might not know wrestling as it is today. So it was such a big deal for that to go off without a hitch and to be successful. And for you to be chosen to be in that very first match, you know, to get that crowd hooked and everything, I think that says so much about the legend, you know, Tito Santana. How do you feel about being selected for the first match?
Well, I don't know if you remember, there was a time when Greg Valentine and I had a really hot feud.
Yes.
And Valentine and I had been selling out the buildings without Hulk Hogan being on the card, and that hadn't happened before.
Right.
The people really bought into our feud, me and Valentine, which ended up being the longest feud in the history of the WWF. So when I find out that I'm going to be on the opening match, I was not very happy because, you know, our match was as hot as anything going on in the WWF at the time.
Right.
And I was pretty disappointed. And right before I went through the curtains, you know, we used to stand behind the curtains.
At the gorilla position.
Back then, they didn't have a gorilla position. Okay. We would just go right through the curtains. I think Gorilla Monsoon was probably on the microphone outside calling the match.
Right.
You know, at times. But Vince Jr. Came up to me and he says, "Tito, the reason you are on the first match is because you need to get the people off their ass, because you're going to set the tempo for the match, for the night." And I, right before I went through the curtains, I had a completely different outlook of why, you know, I was chosen to be number one. I never thought about it that way. And now, over the years, it turns out to be that, you know, that's something that people will never forget, that Tito Santana was the first match in WrestleMania 1.
Absolutely, and they had that confidence in you. They, you know, this thing had this huge buildup, like we said before, you know, so much on the line, had to be successful. So if that opening match was like a dud or a drag, I mean, that you would almost kind of set the tone for the card that night. I mean, yeah, you can recoup in certain areas with certain matches and all, but to have somebody like yourself that, you know, they had the confidence in, that would go out there and steal the show off the beginning, that speaks volumes about you.
Yeah, I you know, it all set in, you know, especially later on in years when the fans started bringing it up. You know, the longer I go, the longer I'm around, I realized how important that spot was.
Yeah, I'm sure at the time you're like, damn, you know, like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm doing, me and Greg got this hot feud, we're selling this out, we're, you know, I'm making waves and moves, and I'm on the opening match at WrestleMania, and it probably didn't set too well. But now that, you know, hindsight, you look back, you're like, man, that was, they entrusted me a lot to go out there and set the tone that night.
Yes, they did. And I don't know if you remember, Valentine ended up wrestling Junkyard Dog.
Yeah, you went out there and got involved in that match.
Yeah, then later on they told me that I was going to do a running there, you know, to put more fuel in the fire for our feud, which, you know, turned out to be a great thing. You know, that they used our match, you know, to just continue going to all the towns. Cause that's what we used to do back then, just go to the towns and have the same matches over and over and over. Because, you know, you didn't have the internet and all that, so we could do the same endings in every different town every night.
Absolutely. It was almost just, you know, practicing your craft as well.
That's right.
Talk to us about your, excuse me, talk to us about your tag team Strike Force with Rick Martel. How did you and Rick like tagging up with each other? And talk to some memories about Strike Force.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but Rick was teamed up with Tom Zink first, and I forgot what the name that they called him. And then Tom Zink left the territory for some reason. I never found out why, but it didn't matter. Vince asked me if I would mind teaming up with Rick Martel, and I said, of course. And first, he wanted to call us the Border Patrol. You know, me from South Texas and him from Canada. And I told, you know, back then, you know, there was some Mexicans that were trying to get across the border in railroad cars. And it was so hot, some of them were dying of dehydration in the cars. So I told Vince, I said, Vince, you know, people are dying trying to cross the border. I said, I could end up being a heel. And he said, you got a point. So then, you know, the next TV taping, they told us, you guys are going to be Strike Force.
That is a very valid point. Yeah, the audience could have turned you heel at that moment in history, you know?
Yeah, they could have. But, you know, you asked me about working with Rick. I mean, Rick was, I consider Rick one of the best workers, in the business, period. And it was like a night off. We didn't even have to, we knew that we were going to be there for each other. And we always, you know, no matter who we worked with, we always had great matches.
Yes, y'all did. Y'all had some very, very high success together as well. Y'all defeated the Hart Foundation for the WWF Tag Team titles. You held them 5 months before y'all end up losing them to Demolition at WrestleMania 4.
Yes, and I believe the reason we ended up losing them to well, I don't know. I wasn't privy to anything, but we lost the belts, and Rick had to take some time off, and I think he was gone like a year. I heard he told me that his wife was sick and he had to be there with her. I said, Rick, we're making so much money, you know, you should hire a nurse. He says, no, I have to be there with her. And I said, oh, okay. You know, I understand, you know, it's family comes first. And, you know, we ended up dropping the belt, and, you know, he was just gone. And then all of a sudden, you know, months and months went by, and then I hear that he's coming back. And I think we had a return bout, or somehow we had a match, and we ended up splitting up.
Yeah, y'all would have a nice little feud, and it would culminate. You would actually defeat him at the 1989 King of the Ring tournament finals.
Yeah, I think we could have had a much longer feud because, you know, both of us were really good workers and people were really buying it. I don't think Vince got as much out of it as he could have.
And that actually, I'm glad we told that story as well, too. That says a lot about Rick, you know, wanting to be there personally for his wife as well, you know.
Yeah.
In 1991, you adopted the Spanish bullfighter gimmick and went by the nickname El Matador. How did you feel about this gimmick?
I didn't really care too much about El Matador. Vince asked me, you know, because I kept asking, you know, Vince wasn't doing anything with me. And, I had proven to him that I could draw money and that I was over with the fans. And I would, you know, I went in there several times ready to give him my notice. And he said, no, I got one more thing for you. And he says, do you mind learning how to be a bullfighter? And I said, no. So they sent me to Mexico, and he rented a whole ring in Tijuana, and I learned how to be a bullfighter, and came back with the gimmick, and supposedly I was going to come back with a big feud with the Million Dollar Man, and we did some vignettes, you know, for that, and all of a sudden they dropped that, and you know, nothing happened for El Matador.
Wow, how interesting, because I'm sure a lot of, you know, guys don't get to go, you know, gimmick training or whatever, so you actually got sent to learn how to be a real bullfighter.
Yes, I did, and I walked in a real bull, a real match, you know, where the, you know, matadors are big stars in Mexico, so I, you know, they had a fight that's on a Sunday, and I was part of the parade.
Oh, wow. Very, very cool. You know, and we talked about before, you have the prestige honor. You've worked the first 9 WrestleManias. What an honor to be able to do that.
Yeah, there's only me and Hulk Hogan who can say that we were on the first 9 WrestleManias.
I figured it was Hulk, and I didn't continue my research after that, but I figured it was just probably you and Hulk, or maybe one other person. But to work the first 9 WrestleManias, I feel like I didn't have to look any further. I'm like, no, it's just going to be him and Hulk, and I pretty much I thought that was it, because that's quite the feat. I didn't think anybody else had that under their belt.
Yeah, that was it. You know, other people were there for a few of them, but not all 9.
And you were babyfacing all 9 too. That you know, as we talked about before.
Yes, and I always got a pop in the garden.
Oh, Tito, you got a pop everywhere you go. You still get a pop. You're still the man.
Thank you.
How did you like, for a little while, you did some, you know, commentary at the Spanish announce table. How'd you like doing that?
I enjoyed it. You know, it wasn't as easy as it seemed, but I replaced, I was working with Carlos. Hugo Savinovich had some legal problems, and he was gone for a year. And then, you know, I was learning, of course. You know, it was a new thing that I didn't know about. So I was learning as I was going. But I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard that Carlos used to knock me to the office, and I believe the reason was because whenever we'd go to a pay-per-views, you know, I was still over pretty good with the fans, so the fans would come to me and they would kind of ignore Carlos. I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not. That's what I feel. But then Hugo came back, the 3 of us were in there, and it was too much, and then they let me go. And you know, I had a teaching job. You know, I thank God that I had a teaching degree, and you know, I just retired in June. I taught for 25 years, and you know, my education, you know, really, really helped me out.
What did you teach, and what grade and so forth?
I taught in the middle school for 25 years, Spanish.
I bet it was so exciting for some of those students, for Tito Santana to be their teacher. How cool is that?
They loved it, and believe it or not, I was the basketball coach. They asked me to do wrestling, but I said sure. I did the Hulk Hogan where he shook his hand and then put his hand on his ear. I told the principal I can do this, and he started laughing. So the next day he says, "What about basketball?" And I was a pretty good basketball player in high school, so I became the basketball coach, and I was the basketball coach for 15 years. And believe it or not, we went undefeated twice. And nobody else has been able to go undefeated. It's not that easy of a league. But I enjoyed coaching for 15 years, but that was enough.
What did it mean? Very, very incredible. And thank you for giving your servants, you know, to the students of America, and we need great role models like yourself. 2004, what did it mean to you to become a WWE Hall of Famer?
Well, I went to the Hall of Fame. They had a Hall of Fame, I think it was in 2000, in Baltimore in a hotel. They inducted Pedro Morales and Bobo Brazil and a few others. And it was just a rinky-dink Hall of Fame thing. So a few years later, when Howard Finkel called me, you know, and he told me that he was, you know, they wanted to put me into the Hall of Fame. The only thing that I was interested was in the payoff. You know, if they wouldn't have given me a decent payoff, I wouldn't have accepted it. But, you know, I was happy with what they offered. And, you know, it turned out to be the best thing that I ever did. You know, they flew my family from Texas here. They sent 2 limousines to my house. They gave us 3 rooms, and I think we were staying at the Hyatt or wherever, you know, the big hotel we were at. And when I got off the car, I mean, I had not realized how big wrestling had gotten, because, you know, I don't watch wrestling, and I stopped watching wrestling, and people from Japan, from Europe, from the UK, they all were waiting, you know, outside, you know, to get your autograph. You know, I felt like I was in the red carpet in Hollywood. I felt like a big star then.
That's incredible. I'm glad they made you feel like that and stuff too, because you're one of these wrestlers that definitely deserve, all the accolades and props that you've ever received. Before we wrap this thing up, I want to talk to you about what you have going on these days, as far as books, appearances. I know you got a new, really cool Remco figure out. Talk to us about all that kind of stuff and where fans can find you on social media and just go through all that.
Well, I'm on Facebook under Merced Solis. And I just yesterday, which in technology is pretty hard for me, I just joined Instagram under Solid.Merced. So I'm on Instagram. I'm going to be going to WrestleCon in Philly. I'm going to be there for sure on Friday and Saturday, the 5th and the 6th. And on the 7th, I'm going to be doing an appearance. But 5th and 6th, I'm going to be part of WrestleCon. I just ordered a bunch of t-shirts. I'm going to have my books. Unfortunately, I'm not going to have the figure yet. But I'll be signing autographs, taking pictures, signing personal merchandise. And, I always enjoy meeting and talking to the fans. And, I didn't do anything all winter. Friday, I'm going to Lubbock, Texas. It's going to be the first show that I do this year. But, once the weather, I hate to travel in the winter with, not knowing what the weather is going to be like.
Sounds like you hibernate in the winter.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah,
we I all? Enjoy,
especially around here in the East Coast, right? I enjoy being home with my family. And I babysit, my wife, we babysat this past weekend. And I don't know, I sent a message to somebody. I said, this is the hardest job I've ever done, babysitting a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old for an entire weekend.
They keep you on your toes.
Oh my God.
I want that.
You can't take a nap. They can take a nap, but you can't.
Right.
Yeah, you better not get caught sleeping on that job, Tito.
Right.
Tell the fans the name of your books and how they can go about purchasing one.
Well, the name of my second book, the other one, there's no copies. The company went bankrupt. But the title of my book is Don't Call Me Chico. And if anybody's interested, you can go on Facebook, make a contact with me, and I'll let you know. I'll take a payment on my book. You can get if you're in the States, you can get my book for $35 and I'll pay for postage. Don't Call Me Chico. And we got that from Jesse the Body Ventura, and he had some kind words to say, for me. Him and Sergeant Slaughter did what do you call the
forward?
The beginning. Yeah, the forward. And I think it's done pretty good, and the fans who read it have really enjoyed it. So you can get it at Amazon, but if you want it autographed, order directly from me. That's the best thing that I can tell you to do. You can order 8x10s directly from me. You can send personal items to my post office box. We can talk about the price, to meet whatever your needs are. And
let's also remind the fans that you also do cameos, because actually you did one for me several months ago. My friend Matt was in the hospital with a brain aneurysm, and you sent him a really cool cameo. So fans, if you want Tito to do a really cool cameo for you, he's on Cameo. Very, very well priced as well.
My cameos have done fantastic. And, I lowered my price and to $15 from $25.99, and I found out that I'm making more money now at $15 than I was at $25.99. And I just figure, the wrestling fans, a lot of the wrestling fans are just not loaded with money, but for some reason they've been able to keep ordering. My cameo shout outs have been doing really good, and I want to thank all the fans who continue to order cameo shout outs from Tito Santana.
Also, what can we expect about this new really cool Remco figure?
I haven't seen the real figure yet, but I've got a lot of good reviews from it. I'm not even going to be able to get mine until August myself. I'm looking forward to it. I mentioned it on Facebook, and a lot of my Facebook fans, you can pre-order my Remco figure already. I think there's two different kinds. And, you know, people are ordering them, and you know, I'm really grateful.
Well, fans, just, you know, to reiterate, check out the book, Don't Call Me Chico. Hit Tito up on Cameo. Look for him to be appearing this year at WrestleCon. Remco figure will be available soon. Tito, thank you so much, and what a huge honor and pleasure to get to interview you. And I can't thank you enough for doing Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall, sir.
Thank you so much. And tell your wife she's got a job. She did a great job.
Oh, yeah. Well,
thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, my co-host better watch out. She's been filling in a lot lately. I'm gonna like the Freebird rule. I'm going to get her trained up, three-way rule.
That's right. You guys take care of yourselves.
God bless you, Tito. Arriba. Thank you again. Arriba. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.